Hello, readers. This is Abby A.L. Knorr reading to you from a small town just outside of Florence called Imprunetta. So if you hear some sounds of Vespas or motorcycles in the background, it's because my little studio apartment is right on the piazza. And this is not a professional recording. Nevertheless, I hope you enjoy. Combatant. The Casey Chronicles, Book 3, Chapter 1. The heels of Jordan's boots clicked against the hardwood floor of the foyer. There was a squeak as her toe depressed the loosed floorboard. The sound of a crackling fire drew her to the parlor. It was an inviting sound, a comforting sound given the maelstrom that whipped the leaves of the trees outside and threw pellets of rain against the glass of the windows. Jordan paused in surprise. A strange dog was curled up on the carpet in front of the fire, a greyhound, if she wasn't mistaken, a racing breed with long limbs, powerful shoulders, and a long spine. He was curled into a ball with his back to her. White speckles dusted his ginger fur, and the fire threw his shadow long and soft against the carpet. The bones of his spine made a row of low mounds down his back. He was thin, this dog, the hallmark of his breed, she supposed. The dog sensed Jordan's approach and lifted his head, facing away from her, ears cocked. He got to his feet, slowly, stiffly, and padded in a circle to face her. His jaw and mouth were dusted with gray. His once bright hazel eyes were milky with cataracts. A scar carved its way down the side of his face, just in front of his right ear. He had the noble face of the greyhound breed, fine and sleek, but as they looked at one another, Jordan gasped. This greyhound was her father, Alan. The fire blew out. A wisp of smoke drifted from the blackened logs and disappeared up the chimney. Outside, the gale of wind and rain screamed on like a coven of vengeful witches. The shadows of the room turned blue and cold. These shadows were dead. The ones that lurk where fire doesn't live. They were evil, creeping shadows. Jordan shivered. Dad? She took a hesitant step forward. The greyhound crossed the room on stiff hips and a limp. Jordan came to her knees, her heart pounding and her mouth dry with distress. Dad, don't leave me. Jordan's voice trembled and her eyes pricked with tears. She put her hand on the dog's withers. The greyhound drew close and lifted a paw, resting it heavily on her knee, and wuffed out a sigh. The greyhound's mind whispered to hers. I'm tired, Jordy. So tired. Dad, no, don't give up. A tear tracked its way down Jordan's cheek. I'm coming for you. The greyhound's pink tongue licked the skin of Jordan's chest just under her left collarbone. She put her forehead against his. He licked her again, his tongue warm and slow. Dad, don't leave me. He licked her again, always in the same spot, just above her heart, but moisture ran from the lick up into the hollow of Jordan's throat, against gravity. The droplet turned cold and spilled over her neck into her hair. Jordan noticed only then that the hair at the nape of her neck was damp. She shivered. Jordan! The greyhound spoke in a woman's voice, making her start and gasp. Jordan flew awake like a small bird at the hoot of a great horned owl. Panting, her neck wet, her eyes darted from side to side. Where am I? You were dreaming, Jordan. The whisper came from a dark shadow bent over her. It was accompanied by the pressure of a warm hand on her shoulder. The sounds of the gale were real. Rain drove and whipped across the portals. The creaks and groans of wood shifting and timbers rubbing against one another cleared Jordan's memory. Another cold drop struck her below the collarbone and ran into her hair. The ship. She was still on the ship. It had been a dream, just a dream. She exhaled in relief. One of her wings jutted out awkwardly to the side. Her feathers trailed in water as it slid across the wooden boards of the deck. The other wing, she couldn't feel. It had gone numb beneath her. Are you okay? Ione whispered, sitting in the hammock, swinging empty next to Jordan's. You were mumbling. Jordan wiped it at her wet neck as another droplet fell from the ceiling and hit her just above her heart. She sat up, and three ratty old blankets fell away from her shoulders. I dreamed my dad was a dog. Jordan yanked her trapped wing from under her body, wincing as the blood rushed back into it and made the whole appendage tingle. Ione's shadow was still as the elf observed this. How curious. A racing animal, Jordan explained, wiping her wet neck and chest with one of the blankets. She realized her face was also wet, but this moisture had come from her eyes. She swiped at her face, and the smell of moldy fabric made her pull back with a mew of disgust. But old and stiff, His racing days were long over. Ione made a contemplative sound. The two women swayed back and forth with the rocking of the ship. Where's Toth? Jordan asked, searching for the Nikt. Up on deck. In this weather? Jordan pushed a pile of blankets aside and put her feet on the floor. She left the ground. She felt around in the dark for her boots. The floor was damp and downright splashy in some places. Vertigo swallowed her as the ship lurched, and she gave a groan. Never mind, I get it. Jordan pulled on her boots and fumbled around her hammock for the long-sleeved leather jacket Ione had purchased for her before they left Matakaw. Jordan loved it. It was specially made to accommodate her wings, lacing up underneath them so they could be free, and yet her back would be kept warm. But best of all, it was warm, lined with something fuzzy and soft. Jordan hadn't wanted to ask what kind of animal fur it was, if it was fur. She worked hard to reject Ione's buying her the jacket, but the elf insisted. Where they were going, it was going to be cold. Do you think we're getting close? We are. The fog is growing thick. That's a good sign under the circumstances. Creepy, Jordan muttered, putting her arms into the jacket's holes. The fabric draped over the tops of Jordan's wings, and she turned so Ione could lace the back of it closed above and below her wings. Jordan fastened the metal clasps that ran up the front and instantly felt warmer. She laced her boots up next. The two women swung in the hammocks as the ship's nose took a dive into a trough, sending their stomachs lurching. Loud voices from the deck of the ship yelled commands in a foreign tongue. Heavy footsteps ran overhead. Waves slapped the hull. Ropes were yanked and sails hoisted. The whole cacophony blended together into a tense soundtrack. Care to move somewhere more solid? Ione gestured to a wooden shelf at the rear of the hold. It might have been used for storage, but it was currently empty. The elf's voice was strained. She grabbed one of the blankets from Jordan's bed and got up. Absolutely. Jordan's stomach flopped over as they staggered across the floor. Muscles in her back complained at having slept in a swinging hammock for several hours. She marveled at how sailors could sleep in such uncomfortable beds for months at a time. Ione spread the blanket on the shelf, and the two women sat with their backs to the rear wall, facing the bow of the lurching ship. Steps leading up to the deck were directly behind them. A couple of empty bottles rolled across the floor as they settled themselves back and grasped the posts either side of the shelf to help keep still. The ship tilted and swayed. Jordan loosed a groan from deep in her gut. The captain says this part of the Rodanian Sea is always rough. It'll pass. Jordan turned her head away from Ione and covered her mouth with her fingertips, wondering if she was going to lose her last meal. She breathed deep, and the nausea eased. She sat back, letting her head fall on Ione's shoulder. The elf rested her own head on top of Jordan's. Tell me again, Jordan croaked. Please, it'll take my mind off vomit. Tell you about the rickshaws. I want to be thoroughly informed before we get to Troublesome. The Rackshacks? Jordan grunted in agreement. I can never remember the name. Troublesome prison sits on an island surrounded by a dangerous sea, Ione began, her voice soft. The elf lifted a long tapered finger and ran it in a straight line in the air in front of Jordan's face from the top of her forehead to her sternum. The finger curved to follow the shape of Jordan's bent neck. Whoa! Jordan's head snapped up. Her vision had gone foggy. Before her opened a misty cartoon scene, a large island, mostly rock. A huge stone building with no windows save for the few on the upper level wavered in the picture. How are you doing this? We learn it young. There was a smile in Ione's voice, though Jordan could no longer see the elf. I haven't used Chara Ray's storytelling magic for a long time. To be honest, I wasn't sure I could still do it. Your skills are intact, let me tell you. Small seabirds wheeled in and out of the clouds covering over this scene in front of Jordan. Everything looks like it was drawn by hand. Like a moving painting. Jordan reached a blind hand forward into the scene, but she found nothing solid. Even her hand was not visible. Keep going. The lurching of the ship seemed to ease as Jordan's senses were occupied. Over 800 years ago, the kingdom of the Rackshack Giants was ruled by a selfish king named Kiriak. A tall, bony giant of a man wearing long robes and a tall, spiky crown appeared on the battlement of the ugly castle. His shape wavered there as though it was made of colored smoke. King Kiriak was a supporter of Razdan, a treacherous Atlantean who had plans to dominate your Earth. Razdan faced all other species in a battle for supremacy of Orisaran. Thankfully, he lost. The prophets, including my ancestor, were the key to his defeat. Prophets still exist today to help ensure the treaty is upheld. This is the treaty that prevents people from traveling back and forth between universes? Jordan didn't need to add that the treaty was only marginally successful at discouraging portal-hopping activities. That's right, but that's a story for another day. The Island King was not only a follower of Razdan, he was obsessed with finding the secret to immortality. Who isn't? The scene wavered and changed. A cold stone room with a fire of green flames crackled behind the king as he bent over a stack of moldering books. As Jordan watched, the giant got to his feet, swept a glass off the table with a hand the size of a car tire, and threw the goblin into the flames. A splash of thick red liquid sizzled against the hot stones behind the fire and ran down in streams, smoking as it went. Kyriak's obsession took him abroad, even to the port city of Matakaw. Jordan watched the giant disembark a huge ship, his enormous size making the dock sway and creak. Fish visible in the water began beneath the dock, darted away, and Jordan thought she could hear the little creatures squeaking in the background. Run for your lives! Swim away! Jordan chuckled at the cartoon silliness of the story. The giant lumbered, alone, down the streets of Matakaw, while magical creatures darted into shops and dove under benches to escape his baleful gaze and clumsy footsteps. How do you know all this? The giant stopped lumbering. His expression went from malevolent to vacant. My ancestor, a prophet named Feroni, left a journal, came Ioni's answer. I've read it from front to back several times over. The elves of Chararay know this history like they know their own faces. Because Feroni was given the forests of Chararay as a reward for what he did. He was our pioneer, and as you know, Chararay is our home even today. Where were your people before that? We were part of the Light Elves' kingdom. We still bear some resemblance to them, but we've had 800 years to evolve our own magic. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Please continue. The king looks bored. The king's face was relaxed and good-natured, not unlike an expression Ioni wore most of the time. As Ioni resumed the tale, the giant re-engaged and snapped back into character, his bushy brows slammed together and his mouth twisted cruelly. Feroni sold King Kyriak an elvish potion, which, when drunk and allowed to course through the king's veins at the passing of the full moon, would turn the Rakshat king immortal. The scene morphed into an indoor meeting between King Kyriak and a very handsome, chestnut-haired male elf wearing satin robes. The elf and the giant sat together, heads bent in serious discussion. Feroni's lips moved soundlessly, and he reached into his cloak and pulled out a small vial. The greedy king snatched at the vial and threw a sack of coins at Feroni, who caught it with a secret smile. What the giant didn't know was that Feroni was part of a movement to stop Razdan and his cohorts from taking over the earth. The potion was a lie. Your ancestor was a treacherous elf, Jordan murmured. The cartoon Feroni made eye contact with Jordan, his face a picture of innocence. He said in Ioni's voice, "All for a good cause, my friend," before dissolving away. Kyriak took the potion back home to wait for the full moon. A new scene materialized. Kyriak strode back and forth impatiently in front of that same crackling green fire. A window in the background displayed a half-moon, then a three-quarters moon as it waxed in time-lapse. King Kyriak grabbed the vial from the table as the moon popped into full size. He tossed the whole thing, glass and all, down his gullet. King Kyriak died. Sort of. Kyriak went stiff, and his tongue flopped out of his mouth. His eyes turned into black buttons, and he fell over to the sound of a long descending whistle. He crashed to the floor with the snapping sound of breaking branches. The king's shape remained, but the room behind him wavered away and became a huge dark tomb, with large bearded heads of stone jutting from the walls. His people buried him and swore vengeance, but little did they know. A hole in the ceiling of the tomb where the king lay appeared and widened, showing again the passing of the moon. 1 week later, the Rakshat king came back to a kind of half-life. Like a zombie, Jordan added. Ioni's voice grew thick with drama. Worse than your zombies. The shape of the king blackened and thinned, his robes dissolved away, revealing a long body with sharp angles, made of more shadow than any real flesh. The dead king slowly rose from his place in the tomb. The head was featureless and drifted above the shoulders, neckless. Instead, a column of smoke held the chin suspended above the collarbones, and there the head bobbed. So spooky, Jordan felt her flesh marble with goosebumps. King Kyriak became the first Rakshat guard of Trevelsome, though it took him some time to turn all of his people. The bony giant made of shadows and smoke bumped his floating head on the stone ceiling of the tomb, making the head bounce like a balloon. As the giant made his way up the stone steps, he repeatedly hit his head against the ceiling. A hollow sound, like coconuts being knocked together, accompanied every bump. Arakshak leaks a toxic poison that contaminates any magic around it. When Kiriak emerged from his tomb, he addled the minds of his own people and they became disorganized and confused, unable to take care of themselves. They died soon after, becoming Rakshaks themselves. The Rakshak emerged from underground into streets full of giants who made soundless screams and scattered before him. They fell away and dissolved into the same kind of tall, necklace creatures as their former king. They fell into step behind him until there were no living giants left, only an army of tall, dark, necklace wraiths. Troublesome guards feed off the fear and confusion they create, which is why the island became a place that everyone leaves their criminals. The vision of the army of Rakshaks dissolved into another scene, a rowboat on the ocean. A devious-looking little man tied up in more rope than what was needed to moor a ship. He was tossed from the rowboat onto the island, and the three oarsmen, the fat plumes in their hats waving goodbye, turned the boat around and sailed away. The little man jumped to his feet, ropes falling away, shaking his fist at the now distant vessel. "Watch behind you, little man," Jordan said, her warning surprisingly sincere. The little man whipped around and his hair grew white in an instant. A Rakshak approached, its dark lumbering shape crossing the island and its long skeletal fingers reaching. As the moon swept by in fast motion, the man's form slowly dissolved. The fog left over seeped into the Rakshak. Its neck grew long, and as it absorbed the mist, the smoke lifting the head higher as it fed. "That's a ghastly story, no matter how silly you make it look. Can I have my sight back now?" The scene dissolved away, and Jordan's view of the dismal ship was back. She shivered. "If we get too close to one of the giants, we'll lose our minds and become Rakshaks, too?" "No, you wouldn't become a Rakshak. Only the original giants became Rakshaks. They are finite in number and thankfully cannot reproduce, as far as I know. If you're in the presence of one of them, you'll soon become so addled that you won't be able to find your way off the island, let alone out of the prison. You stay there until you die, with the Rakshaks feeding off your fear. They're motivated to feed and water the prisoners and keep them alive for as long as possible so they can continue to siphon their own sustenance from them. It's a nasty business. But you've got magic that will protect us from this toxic poison." Ioni nodded. "I invented it a long time ago for a school project. It'll work, but it will also decay over time." Ioni pulled her knees up into her chest and wrapped her arms around herself. "We have to get in and out of there, quickly." "My poor father. It's a good thing humans don't have any magic for them to leech, to make him crazy." "Yes, that's a good thing. But Feroni wrote of the effects the noxious magic has on humans." Jordan remembered. "A coma. What else did Feroni write about in his memoirs? Tell me something that can help us." The story had been entertaining, but now that the cartoon vision was gone, the reality of her father's situation set in. Alan was in grave danger. As a being the Rakshaks could not live off, it would only be a matter of time before they simply discarded his lifeless form and threw him into the ocean, leaving him to drown. Feroni wrote of the caves under the island being the only way to access the prison while delaying coming into contact with the toxic magic until the last possible moment. He said that a strong magical being could fight off the effects of the Rakshaks and preserve their sanity for a time. If they were strong enough, they might descend into the tombs of the Old Kingdom and find the pools leading to the underwater tunnels. "They'd have to be one heck of a swimmer," Jordan murmured. "Yes." "I wish Blue were here," Jordan said, rubbing her upper arms. "I miss the little guy. He can't come where we're going, you know that." "I know. Do you think he'll do as you asked?" "He'll do it." Jordan spoke with confidence, but she'd never asked Blue to do anything without her before. Jordan had penned a letter to Saul, who by now would be frantic with worry. In a short message, Jordan told him of Alan's predicament, who she was with, and that they were going to Troublesome to rescue her father. She never gave him any specifics of their plan. There hadn't been time for that. And she hoped that Saul would take some comfort knowing that Toth, the intimidating nicked mercenary, and Ioni, the brilliant elvish inventor and magician, were her allies. She tucked the letter into a cylinder, fastened it to Blue by way of a collar they'd acquired in Matakaw, and given the dragon instructions to return to the apartment on Upper Rodania. He'd even flown in the right direction, and that was comforting. "I think the storm is coming to an end." Ioni's words broke through Jordan's musing. It did seem as though the waves had lost some of their power. Footsteps pounded on the steps behind them. The women hopped down from the wooden shelf. The pockmarked face of a young sailor appeared, zeroing in on the elf and the arpak. "Troublesome approaches," he said. "Captain won't go much closer. Best get ready." That concludes my reading of the chapter one. Please forgive any mistakes and thanks for bearing with me. Can't wait to get this stories out to you guys. Bye for now.